Let's talk hoops. It is Monday, January 31st, 2011. Adam Azer here with Greg Urbano on our weekly NBA podcast. What's up, Greg? Big day of basketball yesterday, a little Celtics-Lakers.
That is for sure. You know, this time of the year on Sundays, they usually like to set up a couple really good games, and that's exactly what we had yesterday.
Basketball was so good yesterday that I didn't even watch the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, you didn't miss much. I mean, you missed a lot of scoring, for sure, but nothing as a football fan that you would have liked.
We're going to start off the show with the starting five questions for our blogger, Royce Young. Then we're going to look at the power rankings, the trends, and the storylines from around the league. And then we've got a special segment brought to you by Greg Urbano, where he is going to look at three players. Just tell us what you're going to do.
We're going to look at three current players who may or may not be ready to be talked about or discussed for a Hall of Fame membership once they retire. Players that are kind of late in their career, but right now it's a question mark as to whether or not they will actually be in the Hall. And we're going to look at three of those guys, just look at the stats and see whether or not they are Hall of Fame worthy.
Without identifying their names.
Without identifying who they are, and then you'll let me know if they're worthy of the Hall and then try to figure out who they are.
Okay. Let's start it out, though, by bringing in Royce Young. Royce, what's going on, man? First question for you. The Pacers fire Jim O'Brien. Did they make the right decision?
Absolutely. It was time. The Pacers have fallen apart this season. They weren't successful under Jim O'Brien really ever. They got off to a decent start. They're playing really good defense, but he's just kind of lost control of them. I mean, they're 17-27 now. They're not out of the Eastern Conference playoff talk because, I mean, if you're in the bottom of the East, you only have to, heck, the Cavs are still in the conversation, actually, as bad as the bottom half of the East is. But, he'd lost the team. I mean, Larry Bird said that he felt like his negativity was really weighing on Roy Hibbert's development and his reluctance to play younger players like Tyler was really affecting the development of the team. So it was the right call to just cut ties now, move on. The problem is that they don't have really a great replacement. They're using Frank Vogel, who's a very young interim coach. So that's kind of the problem that they're at, and that's the reason that they were thinking about hanging on to O'Brien for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I agree. It's time. There's too much talent on this team. They're good enough to be a playoff team in the East.
Certainly in the Eastern Conference. Yeah. No doubt about that.
All right, second question for you. Is Mike Brown a good replacement for Jim O'Brien? I will start, and I will say yes. This guy needs to get back into coaching. He's a good coach. He's been to the NBA Finals. He's been to the Eastern Conference Finals. Get this man back into the game. Royce, what do you think?
Absolutely. I agree totally. I mean, like you said, Mike Brown's a great coach, former coach of the year. Took the Cleveland Cavs, to three straight 60-win seasons. The only reason he got canned is because the Cavs never got over the hump. So Dan Gilbert and the Cavs organization kind of felt like he was the one to blame. Maybe that would, convince LeBron to stay if they showed that they were committed to firing Mike Brown to get over the top. But there was no reason for Mike Brown to go. I mean, he's a very, very good coach. He's a player's coach. Players like him. And I think that if he went in there, he could really kind of infuse that organization with a little bit of youth and excitement, play some of those younger guys, and I think that they could get right back in there with him.
Well, like Roy said, he's a young guy, players like him. What would be the reason why he wouldn't have a job right now? Is people think that only LeBron did everything there in Cleveland. And, I'm not sure. And until you give him another chance, until you hire him to another team and let him see what he could do, who knows whether it was just LeBron and then, everyone else riding his coattails to those NBA Finals. Not really sure, but I do believe he deserves another chance, especially when you look at the names that are out there and who's just being recycled year after year. No reason why Mike Brown shouldn't.
Absolutely. All right, so the Eastern and Western Conference All-Stars, the reserves are going to be announced this week. So, Royce, I will ask you to pick two of these four Western Conference forwards, all right? This is tough. Pick two. LaMarcus Aldridge, Tim Duncan, Blake Griffin, Zach Randolph.
Man, it's tough. I mean, the Western forwards, really just every player in the West has really gotten where it's tough to pick. I think Blake Griffin is a for sure, no doubt selection. I mean, he's averaging almost 28 and 15 in January. He's just been unbelievable. And the thing about him is it's not just the highlight dunks. I mean, that's what we all see and that's what we all think about. But during that 47-point explosion he had against the Pacers, he only had one dunk. I mean, he showed off what he can do. He's just a fantastic talent. I'm going with number two. I'm going with LaMarcus Aldridge. I hate to take off Tim Duncan, but I think people just put him on kind of as the Lifetime Achievement Award. I mean, Duncan's only averaging about 14-8 right now. That's not really all-star caliber. And Aldridge's team is better than Zach Randolph's. And Aldridge has been a huge part. Ever since Brandon Roy's been out, Aldridge is averaging 24 points a game, which is just excellent, really. So I bet Aldridge and Griffin are the two choices out of that group.
I have the same two. You are a smart man, Royce, and let's see if Urbano is as smart as we are.
Anytime he agrees with you, he's smart, I see. So,
I'm brilliant.
Yeah, I also have the same two. We talked about Blake Griffin here several times throughout the season, and the fact is he is an All-Star. There's no way you can say he's not, for not only his statistics, and then we talked about, again, the All-Star game being a showcase for the fans. You want the guys out there who are loved by the fans, and you can see that that's Blake Griffin right now. That's clearly him. The other point with LaMarcus Aldridge over Zach Randolph, as you said, the team is just doing slightly better. You can't really say anything wrong about what Zach Randolph's doing. He's going and performing every single night, putting up 20 and 10 numbers. Unfortunately, he seems just not as good as LaMarcus Aldridge, who has played well, and as you said, without Brandon Roy, showed that now he is the guy on that team.
So we'll pick two of these Western Conference guards to be your reserves. Ready?
All right.
I'll start with you, Urbano.
All right.
Monte Ellis, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Martin, Steve Nash. Give me two.
Wow. Off the bat, Russell Westbrook is, to me, a no-brainer. Not only is he playing well, but he's playing well for a playoff contender.
He's only shooting 43.4%. He forces shots.
He's not your prototypical about, you know, going to shoot about 50% point guard. He's a guy who drives to the lane, puts his body on the line, and he does take shots that at times might seem unnecessary because he's trying to play at a certain pace. He's trying to keep the pace for that team.
All right, so he's one. Who's
absolutely with Russell Westbrook there. The other one really is a toss-up between Monte Ellis and Steve Nash. Now, Steve Nash, again, from the assist standpoint, he is much better than what Monte Ellis can do. Monte Ellis clearly the better scorer. Right now, I would probably go with Steve Nash. Looking at what Phoenix has done lately, they are starting to gather into form. They had a nice big win over Boston the other night. So, for me, Steve Nash gets it slightly ahead of Monte Ellis, who, to me, just needs to share the ball a little bit more and continue to make players around him better, which Steve Nash, as we know, is one of the best at doing of all time.
Yeah, I have Nash and Westbrook as well. Royce, settle it. What do you got?
I think you got to go with Westbrook, absolutely. I mean, like you did say, I mean, his efficiency numbers are a little bit down. I mean, he shoots around 43%, but he's the kind of guy that, as a point guard, puts up LeBron numbers. I mean, he averages almost 25, 8, and 8. I mean, he's 25, 8 assists, and then 5, 6 rebounds a game. I mean, the other night he had 35 points, 13 assists, 13 rebounds. I mean, the guy is pretty insane with what he can do. I think the second one, it's tough. Monte Ellis is a fantastic scorer. Steve Nash, obviously, is one of the all-time great point guards. But I'm a little bit of a stats-inclined person, you know, with the efficiency numbers. And I think Kevin Martin really has to be considered. I mean, he scores at just an insane rate. I mean, he'll take 14 shots and score 29 points. So I really love the fact that he shoots such high percentages from the field, from the free-throw line. I mean, he's a 50-40-90 guy every single year almost now.
Yeah.
So I'm going with Kevin Martin. I know that's probably unpopular, but
no, it's
I like
a good pick. Good pick, certainly. And finally, we'll end it with the Eastern Conference All-Stars. Pick two of these to be your reserves. Ray Allen, Raymond Felton, Joe Johnson, Luol Deng. What do you think, Royce?
Ooh, man. You know, I think that you got to cross out Joe Johnson from the beginning. He was hurt for some. He's played better lately, but I think he's got to go. I like Raymond Felton a lot just because, I mean, it's unfair to give him credit for this, but, I mean, he plays in New York. He's been a huge part of the Knicks coming back around. I think that that's worth something. And, you know, he's really evolved into one of the premier point guards in the Eastern Conference. After that, I think you got to go with Ray Allen. I mean, the guy's about to break Reggie Miller's three-point record for most hit in a career. He's actually having one of his best seasons efficiency-wise. I mean, he's shooting almost in the last 2 months, he's almost shooting 50% from three, which is just insane.
Wow.
So I like Ray Allen and Raymond Felton for those two spots.
I like Ray Allen. I've come around on him. He is shooting 50% this year. It's pretty amazing.
True.
Best he's ever shot.
Yeah.
But I do not like Raymond Felton. I do not think he's playing well. Last two or three weeks, he's been pretty bad. I will take Joe Johnson over Raymond Felton. Now, before, I thought Raymond Felton was a great candidate, but he's been slumping, so I took him out. So I got Felton.
Sure.
I got Johnson and Ray Allen, Greg.
Yeah, to me, Joe Johnson, for me, is the no-brainer, I thought. I mean, really, especially as of late, if you look at the statistics he's been putting up, been playing terrific ball, all-around guy. You know what he's going to give you every single night. And he is the consistency for Atlanta that they need. Every other guy on that team, for the most part, you don't know what you're going to get each night. You're going to get some points out of Jamal Crawford on the bench.
I think Josh Smith is
he's been
consistent.
Great, but again, his shooting is not ever consistent. You wouldn't say that by any means. So Joe Johnson provides that consistency on offense and on defense. So I go with him. Secondly, I actually love what Luol Deng's been doing lately. If you watch the Bulls play, he has been terrific.
Yeah,
whenever they
underrated.
Need a bucket, they actually go to him now. And he's been able to do that, whereas in years past, I don't think he could have played that role. And, you know, obviously when they get fully healthy in the front court, he'll have even more space on the court to work.
All right, well, we definitely disagree on the East. All right, here's your bonus question, Royce. Sixth question for you. You were at the Thunder Heat game yesterday on Sunday.
Yeah.
In your opinion, is Chris Bosh fake tough or real tough?
It's funny because I was standing in the locker room when Kevin Durant started saying that, and every reporter started kind of looking around with big eyes at each other, like, is Kevin Durant really saying this?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought when I read it.
It's unexpected.
It's so out of character. And yeah. I remember I actually tweeted out some of the quotes right away, and nobody else had written anything on it. And for a minute there, I was almost wondering if I dreamed it, because I was saying, I was like, man, because it was so unbelievable. But, you know, I went home and I watched the clip of what happened, and it was kind of odd how Chris Bosh stuck his nose in there when Kevin Durant was just talking to James Harden. But I would say that Chris Bosh doesn't have a great reputation. I mean, Shaq did call him RuPaul not too long ago.
That's true.
And now Kevin Durant, you know, who's one of the all-time nicest guys right now, calls you out. That doesn't do good for your credibility.
Fake tough. Verdict's in.
Yeah, I go fake tough as well. You know, I mean, there are some tough guys on that Miami Heat team. I wouldn't say Chris Bosh is one of them.
Royce, thanks a lot, man. Take it easy.
Thanks, Royce.
All right, see you guys.
Take care.
That is our CBSSports.com NBA blogger, Royce Young. Let's continue on with the show and look at some of the games from yesterday, from Sunday. Exciting day of basketball, and the Heat and the Thunder kicked it off with a really good game. It came down to Eddie House, of all people, hitting the big three-pointer, and the Heat go on to win 108-103. Eddie House didn't really like the gesture so much after he made the three with 22 seconds left, but LeBron passed the ball.
He
gets criticism for that. I've always said, why do you criticize him when he hits an open teammate?
Absolutely.
Eddie House is a good clutch player, and I think, you know, the Heat, after they lost on Thursday, Greg, to the Knicks, they were 1-8 in games decided by 5 points or less. They've now won two in a row in that situation, by one over the Pistons, by five over the Thunder. I think Eddie House is a guy that should get more consideration for big crunch time minutes.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. That's what they need in those closing minutes, is they need baskets. They play defense well. We know that. They're going to get stops. They need baskets. And what you see a lot of times with Miami Heat late in games is a stagnant offense, which one of the guys, whoever's having a hotter night, is Dwayne Wade, LeBron James, has the ball, and then it's basically clear it out and let him isolate. Now, what you get with Eddie House is you have the ability, when someone crashes on the double team, to simply get it out to Eddie for an open shot, and that's huge. Now, obviously, Mike Miller hasn't been playing at the point that they thought he would, especially not at this point of the season. So for someone to be able to hit those clutch shots on a consistent basis, we know Eddie House can do that. He's cold-blooded. He hit one shot in the game. That was the only shot that he hit in the game.
Mike Miller, by the way, got that rebound and kept that play
alive. That was a great play by Mike Miller. As you said last week, a very underrated rebound, for sure.
And also, I thought another key to the game was LeBron James defending Kevin Durant. Durant had a big first quarter, but he ended up just 7 of 20 from the field. He did have 33 points, 16 of 19 at the free throw line, but LeBron James guarded Durant for a lot of that game, really did an outstanding job and reminds you how good of a defensive player he is.
Absolutely. When he locks in, and if you look at those two physically, and really if you look at Kevin Durant, who can guard him physically? Only LeBron James.
Yeah. Boston over the Lakers in L.A., a convincing win, 109-96. And if you had never watched Kobe Bryant play before, this is the only game you would have needed to see. This was vintage Kobe.
Yeah.
He shot the ball on 10 straight possessions in the fourth quarter. He went 5 out of 10. He also had an offensive foul mixed in there. But he did not pass the ball in the fourth quarter. He just decided, that's it, I'm taking over the game. And he had some good moments, and he had some really bad moments. But ultimately, this is what Phil Jackson was talking about when he said Kobe screws up the offense.
There's no doubt about it. I'm going to talk a little bit more about Kobe when we get to our power rankings. But really, this is kind of what we expect from the Lakers. This is the team who they are, especially late in games. Those other guys just don't seem to stand up, show up, or really even get shots, because Kobe does want to have the ball in his hands, and he does control the offense. Now, I'm not sure, from a coaching standpoint, if Phil Jackson is calling these plays or not, but at some point, if that continues late in games where Kobe just takes over, Phil's got to say, okay, here's the set play we're doing, and let's go out and run this rather than in isolation with number 24.
Now, to be fair, he had 41 points, 16 of 29 from the field. He had a pretty
great
good game. And the game was probably decided even before he tried to take it
for
over
sure
in the fourth quarter, because it was a 7-point game with 7:14 left, and then he shot the ball on 8 straight possessions, then he had an offensive foul, then he shot the ball on 3 straight possessions. So, two straight possessions. So he just completely tried to take over the game, and I don't like to see that, but the fact is the rest of the Lakers are not playing well enough. They're
That's
not stepping up. Ron Artest is completely absent. He's still absent.
Yeah.
And Gasol and Bynum were soft yesterday. Yeah. They were soft.
No doubt.
Glenn Davis plays with more heart than they do.
Well, we know, based on the finals a couple years back when Andrew Bynum was hurt, looking at the problems that the Lakers have, especially going up against Boston, when Boston has a healthy, bigger front court, they seem to dominate that area. They did that, and then you got great play out of the big four there in Boston last night, and you see what the result was.
The Celtics had 34 assists. The Lakers had 10 assists on Sunday. Some news, some notes, and trends in the league. Chicago has won 5 straight. They've won 8 out of 9. 5 straight wins are over Dallas, Cleveland, Milwaukee, Orlando, and Indiana. And that game against Orlando had a big effect on our power rankings, which we'll get to a little bit later. Dallas has won 4 straight. The Wizards are still winless on the road. They did not win. They're now 0-23 on the road. And then you got these two teams that are trying to get into that 8th spot in the Western Conference, Greg, and Memphis and Phoenix, 7-3 in their last 10 games, beating up on the Eastern Conference. Not really that big of a surprise, but Phoenix, back-to-back wins over Boston and New Orleans. Got a little bit lucky in that New Orleans game. Grant Hill had a goaltending that was not called with about 2 seconds left that would have tied the game, maybe more like 4 seconds left. But Marcin Gortat is playing well.
Good minutes out of Gortat, Fry lately. Good minutes out of both of them.
Yeah, they just need one of their bigs, whether it's Lopez or Gortat off the bench, to be physical and give them something down there. But sure. I don't know what to make of that 8 seed. I still like Portland. Yep. As long as Aldridge is healthy.
I mean, it's tough. Obviously, they're missing Brandon
Roy. I know you
Brandon
said
Roy.
Earlier that you like
I actually like Memphis earlier on. I'm still not sure. As we said, you know what you get with Zach Randolph. Rudy Gay's been very clutch this season. Just still not seeing a consistent effort from them every single night.
Yeah, and O.J. Mayo, of course, suspended. Yep. I don't know if that's a huge deal, but it obviously makes them a little bit less deep. Yep. The Kings are giant slayers, Urbano. Back-to-back wins over the Lakers and the Hornets. And I want to talk about what Carl Landry said.
Yeah.
Because he talked about Rick Adelman, of course, he used to be on Houston, and Carl Landry said, quote, on Houston, he was saying, "We ran and everybody shared the ball, and when we didn't have anything on the break, we'd run pick and rolls. We won 22 straight games without Yao and mostly without Tracy McGrady. We could do that here, but that's not what we do, and you have to play the system the coach wants." So that's kind of a shot at Paul Westphal.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, yes, he's praising Rick Adelman, and he deserves praise. One of the best coaches in the NBA, but it's certainly a low blow to his own coach. So, not sure what they will end up doing with Carl Landry, but clearly he's not happy there in Sacramento right now.
No, and it looks like Paul Westphal is kind of losing control of that team. Yeah. There are definitely some personalities on that team,
without a doubt.
And Westphal having a rough go of it, but I guess they're getting a little bit better. They're beating some good teams. Yeah.
Landry's a player, really, that if someone that's close in the playoffs or someone would like to trade for a big guy who's going to give you consistent effort, is going to be able to score and rebound, Carl Landry can do that.
The Cavs have now lost 20 games in a row. They have set a franchise record. The all-time record in one season for most losses in a row is 23. That was the Vancouver Grizzlies in 1995-96 and the 97-98 Nuggets. So, Greg, here are the next 4 games. If they lose all 4, they create the new world record.
Nice. For longest.
Cleveland Cavaliers next 4 games. You tell me win or loss. At Miami.
Loss.
Versus Indiana at home.
Possible win, but I'll go loss.
Well, they better win that one because the next two are at Memphis and then home against Portland.
2 losses there, unfortunately. It's tough.
All right, Indiana.
Yeah,
it's up to you.
Good luck there.
Power rankings time. We'll start out with Greg Urbano's power rankings. What do you got?
For me, number one, and this has obviously been for a couple weeks now, but the San Antonio Spurs currently playing the best basketball in the league. Not one player on that team averages over 20 points per game.
That's crazy.
And if you look at it, there are 5 players in double digits, however, so they're balanced. And if you look, they're averaging 104.4 points per game, good for 5th in the league, while shooting 47.1% from the floor and 39.1% as a team from three-point land. Obviously, those are things they're doing this year. We didn't expect them to be a scoring team like they are, averaging over 104 points, and that's just another reason why they're so good, because we know what they are defensively and what they do to lock teams up and to be able to score that amount of points per game.
I didn't give them too much credit as a defensive team.
They've obviously gotten slower, but when it comes down to it, crunch times, getting stops, they're able to do that.
I agree, Spurs are number one.
Boston Celtics, for me, that 17-point loss at Phoenix just really was an example of Boston looking ahead in their schedule from what I could see. 2 days later in the Staples Center, we saw what the team is capable of doing. And really, the big four all scored in double digits and all shot over 50% from the floor against the Lakers. And Glenn Davis and Nate Robinson also had over 10 points, so we see the depth that Boston has. At number 3, I have the Chicago Bulls, and I'll talk a little more about why I didn't put Orlando here and why Chicago right now is standing out. Basically, in the game against Orlando, the Bulls pulled down 16 offensive rebounds as a team. You compare that to Orlando's 7, 5 of those from Dwight Howard, so 2 outside of Dwight. And this was without Joakim Noah, who we know is just a beast when it comes to rebounding on the boards. And this is a team that takes rebounding and defense to heart, but they can also score when necessary. As I mentioned, Luol Deng playing great down the stretch. The Heat, number 4, basically, obviously the big win in Oklahoma City, we know about that. Even if Eddie House was the guy knocking down the shot, that's still big for them. Dwayne Wade has just been really out of control right now lately. He's been playing great. But right now what I see from Wade late in games is that he's fatiguing. If you see in the fourth quarter, his numbers get worse. And basically what's happening is they had depth earlier in the year. They could rotate the big three so they wouldn't get upwards of 40 minutes. That hasn't happened lately because they're more and more injured,
yeah.
Which means more and more minutes for LeBron and Wade. They need to get past that point and get healthy.
Well, they're healthier now.
But healthier.
Finally, it was that game yesterday against the Thunder. They finally had just about everybody.
Absolutely. The Lakers, they were who we thought they were, really. I mean, I look at the Lakers. This is who we thought they were. We know at certain times when trailing late in the games, Kobe is going to go into solo dolo mode, and he's going to be the only one trying to do it.
What was that?
Solo dolo. You got to keep up on the Kid Cudi references, you know? So
I don't
basically,
know
he goes into just the mode of doing everything himself, as we know, and the offense becomes stagnant. And it really looks like the Miami Heat when they play like that. And the last thing for me is, Ron Artest basically got his ring and decided to retire, but not tell anyone.
Yeah.
That's basically what I've seen with the Lakers as of now. Really, and then Orlando, outside looking in, they just really got destroyed by Chicago in a game that Dwight Howard had 40 points and 15 rebounds. I mean, and he shot incredibly from the floor.
Jameer Nelson
and
got
from
hurt
the line.
In that game.
Jameer Nelson did get hurt, but if you look at both Turkoglu and Richardson, they combined for 4 of 20 shooting in that game and only 13 points of the two of them. So you aren't getting the effort from the other guys, in which really in the NBA we know you need more than just one guy.
Oh, Dwight's been great. He's been very consistent.
Fantastic.
And also, we got to keep the Thunder in mind. We've got to keep the Hawks in
right
mind.
There.
We've got to keep the New Orleans Hornets in mind right now. They could be just as good as Orlando, and they could be just as good as the Lakers. And anyway, let's reveal my power rankings. Yours went San Antonio, Boston, Chicago, Miami, L.A. I've got the same five teams, but I go San Antonio, Boston, Miami 3, Chicago 4, and the Lakers 5th. Boston is incredible right now. All four of their best players, Allen, Pierce, Rondo, and Garnett, are all shooting over 50% on the season, which is just crazy. And that would be career years in that category for Allen and Paul Pierce. Just a very efficient team, and the bench is so good.
Yep.
Miami, I have number 3. I originally did have Chicago number 3 over Miami because they beat Miami pretty recently, but there were some injuries in that game. Remember, Chris Bosh got hurt in that game. Did LeBron play in that game? I cannot remember.
He was on the floor. Yeah.
Okay, so I do have Miami. They've won 2 games in a row now, decided by 5 points or less, and they were 1-8 in those situations before that. Chicago 4th. They've won 8 out of 9. They've won 5 straight. One thing I don't like about Chicago, 23-4 at home, 10-10 on the road.
Yep.
They need a top 4 seed. And even if they don't get that, if they do get that top 4 seed, what's going to happen in the second round of the playoffs? If they finish 4th and they end up playing the number 1 seed in the second round, are they going to be able to go on the road and win games? They're not a good road team.
Yep.
And then the Lakers, you say they are who we thought they were. I'm disappointed. I thought they had turned the corner. I was not expecting that kind of performance on Sunday against the Celtics.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we also know that they go through lulls in almost every season in which, oh, man, they look terrible. People start to complain and start to worry, and then they go right back into rolling.
But I thought that they were rolling, and I thought that they were ready to have a really big game. I think a lot of people expected more from them on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, coming off a championship, it's always a different season, and the effort's just not there. And certainly from guys like I mentioned with Ron Artest and even on the bench, it just doesn't seem like the same tenacity night in and night out.
The bench is just not that good.
Not at all.
That's the big problem right now,
and
especially that point guard spot.
Yep.
Blake and Fisher might as well not even be on the floor.
This is very true.
And as much as I like Shannon Brown, sometimes he doesn't do anything. Yeah. He's not that good yet.
He's an athlete.
He shouldn't have to be that good. They should have better players on their bench, especially at the guard position. So now it's time for our brand new segment. And Greg Urbano has got 3 players in mind. He's not going to tell us the names of the players. He's going to give us their career stats. And as I look over at his sheet, I can see he X'd out the names.
Just so you don't
so
see
I
the
wouldn't
names.
Cheat.
So I knew you would try to cheat, so I made sure.
All right, so kick it off. We're going to make the case that these guys are Hall of Fame worthy.
That's right. Again, we're going to look at 3 different players. And in the graphic, you'll see basically these 3 guys and some of the career stats that they have put up. Player number 1.
I did not know the identities, by the way.
Definitely did not, so it's basically up to Azer to guess whether or they are Hall of Fame worthy and also to tell us what player he thinks that is. The first player, 12 years pro, 34 years of age, the career average of 22.6 points per game, 5.3 rebounds, and 4.1 assists, so a very balanced game. Averaging in the playoffs, he's averaging 23.3 points, 6.2 boards, 4.5 assists. Scoring goes up a little bit, rebounding goes up a little bit. 8-time All-Star. He's averaged over 20 points per game for 10 consecutive seasons. Now, this was earlier in his career. And he ranks 8th amongst active players in career points. Currently 36th all-time with just over 20,000 points. He has more points than Hall of Famers John Stockton, Bob Lanier, Scottie Pippen, Isaiah Thomas, Bob McAdoo, and Julius Erving.
I think I know who it is.
If you want to do your guess now, we could do that.
Well, I would say that based on what I see here, this guy is a Hall of Famer.
He is a Hall of Famer.
I think so. And I think it's Paul Pierce.
Hall of Fame worthy, and you think Paul Pierce. Okay.
Am I right?
We'll get to it at the end. I'll let you know.
Okay.
Player number two. Player number two has played for 13 years. He's age 31. His career averages are 20.8 points per game, 5.8 rebounds per game, and 4.6 assists. Again, another very balanced player. Does it all. Averaging 28.5 points, 6.9 rebounds, and 6.2 assists in 38 career playoff games. Those numbers really across the board are almost as good as you get, especially for a guy that's a kind of a tweener. A two-time scoring champ.
Hey, don't give away more.
A seven-time All-Star, ranks ninth among active players in career points. Currently 62nd all-time. More points than Magic Johnson, Kevin McHale, Bob Cousy, Pete Maravich, Joe Dumars, and James Worthy, all who are in the Hall of Fame. Any guesses?
Well, I'm pretty sure I know this one's Tracy McGrady.
Okay, and is he Hall of Fame worthy? Now, again, outside of the name, on paper, so on paper he is.
On paper, yeah.
Okay.
Two-time scoring champ, seven-time All-Star. You know, actually, I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
So
20.8 points average in his career, which means to me he had some really, really great seasons, didn't sustain it.
Okay.
And that's just forgetting that it might not even be Tracy McGrady.
Okay. It's odd, though, that number one would be on paper, but number two wouldn't be. I mean, there's not much difference there. You know, maybe two more points scored, less assists for the top guy. In the playoffs, five more for this guy. So, interesting guess.
Yeah,
let's get on to number three.
Number one has over 2,000 more career points.
He does.
So, to me, player number one has sustained it for a little bit more. He's probably had one or two more good seasons than player number two.
That is true. All right, let's get to number three. This person has been a pro for 13 years, age 34, career averages of 15.5 points, 2.9 rebounds, and 5.6 assists. You can probably see that this guy's not a big man. Averaging 17.8 points, 3.4 rebounds, and 5.9 assists in 139 career playoff games, just below 90% from the free throw line in his career. He was an NBA Finals MVP, which probably gave it away. Ranks 19th amongst active players in career points, currently 119th all-time. And he also ranks 6th amongst active players in career assists, currently 43rd all-time in career assists. Hall of Fame worthy?
No.
No.
Not based on the numbers, no.
Okay.
That's Billups?
That is Chauncey Billups. I will give you that, yes.
Okay.
So the third player there is Chauncey Billups, obviously someone whose career did not start as fast as it had, you know, geared up towards later in his career. And, you know, probably because of that, earlier in his career, he didn't have the numbers that you would expect, but he had a stretch, about an 8-year stretch, where he was as good as any point guard.
Yeah, easy.
Outside of assists. Now, winning,
outside
scoring,
of some of
shooting
the
free throws,
ones.
Shooting threes, he was as good as any point guard. He couldn't get those assists up there like the Steve Nashes of the world.
Well, what do point guards do, Greg? They assist.
Not all of them.
Yeah, I know. Not Chauncey Billups.
Yes.
He's kind of a ball hog.
Okay, so you've got two out of three correct. Tracy McGrady was the second player. Third player is Chauncey Billups. However, the first player that you guessed is not Paul Pierce.
Who was it?
Any other? It's a guy very similar to him. Very similar
games.
Oh,
it's Vince Carter.
No
I wrote Vince Carter first.
No ring for this guy. So basically, I think the NBA Finals thing probably gave you Chauncey. Tracy McGrady as
well. No, actually, the 90% free throw shooting gave me Billups.
Okay.
McGrady, 13 years pro, age 31. Kind of narrowed it down. And,
coming out of high
and
school.
And plus a two-time scoring champ. And then, I guess Vince Carter, I would think he has somewhat similar numbers to Paul Pierce.
For sure.
Vince Carter is not a Hall of Famer. We established that a few weeks
ago.
Tracy McGrady, to me,
but you said based on these numbers that he is because you thought it was Paul Pierce.
That could be true. That could be true.
So you thought it was Paul. You're picturing the rings, and you said, okay, that's Hall of Fame worthy. So now that you know that it is Vince, and you look at these numbers, you're kind of second-guessing whether he's Hall of Fame worthy.
Yeah.
Because winning, obviously, is not part of the stuff that we put here.
That's fair.
But it is a huge part of the equation for voters, no doubt about that.
I don't think any of these three guys are Hall of Famers now that I know who they are.
Looking at the probability, and this was on basketballreference.com, the probability for Vince Carter was about 87%, for Tracy McGrady about 70%, and Chauncey Billups only at about 21%.
If I had to pick one, I would say McGrady.
Okay.
If I had to go with just one.
Yeah.
And then if I had to go with two, it would be Billups and then Carter is, because I think there's a direct correlation between Vince Carter the player and Vince Carter the non-winner.
Yes.
Put it that way. I don't think that.
And we saw stretches in Vince Carter's career where when he played his last couple weeks, his last couple months for Toronto, where he was just dreadful. He basically gave up and showed that I'm not really going to even try. I don't know that you can say that about these other guys.
What do you think? Are these guys Hall of Famers to you?
Personally, again, I've always been a fan of Tracy McGrady. Started my writing career with his website. I would say yes, just because I saw that stretch of basketball that he played. He scored 62 points in a game against the Washington Wizards, and he really was, for a couple years, right there with Kobe Bryant, whether or not you thought he was better or not. Personally, I did at the time, but clearly we know what happened. Now, I would say Tracy McGrady is a Hall of Famer. I think he needs, though, some part here in the end of his career where he latches on with the playoff team, gets out of that first and second round.
I don't think it's going to do anything for him, man.
If you were to get a ring, if you were to get a ring, and not be a primary contributor, but someone that contributed to that team, if he got a ring, you don't think that would push him, you know, on some people's ballots at least?
Yeah,
because
it might.
He's borderline because already.
I think it helped say a guy like Ray Allen.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I don't know. I think people definitely consider him more for the Hall of Fame now. Yeah. And but the thing is, Ray Allen's been so good. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have that kind of basketball left in him. McGrady can't play as well as Ray Allen.
I mean, Ray Allen, one of the best in-shape athletes of all time, and just runs and runs and runs, and he's never had a major injury that broke down his body. Tracy McGrady's had multiple injuries to the back, to the knee, and really that's what derailed him here. I don't think anyone would argue if he played an entire healthy career that he would be a Hall of Famer, unfortunately. A lot like Ken Griffey Jr. in baseball, he had a lot of injuries that derailed him.
One thing I like that you pointed out, Greg, is that Tracy McGrady, you might know, well, he has not fared well in the playoffs, but his stats in the playoffs are excellent. So it was not his fault that he couldn't get out of the first round.
Not at all. Well,
so
I mean,
you do make a good case
in there. Orlando, when he was an eighth seed against the number one seed Detroit Pistons, if you look at the team he had around him, when he pushed them to seven games, I mean, you had probably the second best player on the team was a rookie, Drew Gooden. You had Gordon Giericek, who they traded for midseason. That was also a very good player. They had guys like
Remember Gordon Giericek.
Yes, they had guys like Andrew DeClercq.
I don't even want to remember these guys.
Andrew DeClercq and Stephen Hunter are the two big men going up against, you know, the Wallaces. So for me, yeah, you know, obviously he didn't get past the first round. A lot of people will point that out, but it's not like he didn't play great.
Yeah, I could buy McGrady for the Hall of Fame, but not Carter and not Phillips.
That's good.
All right, that's it. That's Greg Urbano. I'm Adam Azer. Our producer's Mike Friedman. Thanks a lot for checking us out. We'll be back next Monday with another NBA podcast. Have a good one, everyone.